I am terrified of heights. And I've always been terrified of heights. And it was really bad when I was a little kid. And my father is this sort of bigger than life, bigger than me kind of guy who really thinks that you shouldn't be afraid of anything. And I'm not afraid of much. I'm not afraid of any man. I hold degrees in 2 martial arts. I'm a really brave soul, but when it comes to to heights and also the sharks in my father's swimming pool. So it's true. Spielberg is a genius. I'm about 8 or 10 years old, and my father decides he's going to help me overcome this fear, and he forces me to go up into the Washington Monument, which is not only high, but it's also really confined, and it just exacerbated the problem. So from whenever that was, and I don't remember how old I was, but ever since, I have been absolutely mortified of being any higher than this off the ground. And that's not a joke. If I get in a lot around here, I shake, and I'm actually shaking a little bit now. About a month ago, I go to Vegas with my girlfriend, at Madofia, and she says, why don't we go up in the Paris casino replica of the Eiffel Tower? And I was like, yeah, cool. I was okay with it. And we get in the elevator, and the thing that I didn't realize, I'm okay with elevators, I'm okay with high buildings for the most part, if I don't see out. But the thing about this is that it's a skeletal building, and it's a glass elevator, and they force you to look out. And so we literally come up from the casino floor out, and we're above the city, and I'm holding onto the railing, and I'm holding her hand, and I'm being gripped with fear, and I couldn't squeeze her hand, so I almost squeezed my own other hand off, holding onto the railing, and she's just pleasantly talking to this woman with a French accent. And when we got to the top, and she's like, she stepped out, and I couldn't get out, and then she had to drag me out, and I was literally like walking around being terrified. So that's really a way to explain this. So I work at the Hard Rock Cafe at Universal City Walk. I've worked for the company for 7 years, and I know a lot of people in the company. So a guy I work with, his name is Jamie, he's a really adventurous type. And he suggests to me that I should go skydiving. Now, it's something that I've always wanted to do. I wanted to overcome this fear thing. It's really important. I don't like being afraid of things. I think that it's important to let me choose my life, not let my fears choose it for me. So I'm saying to him, yeah, Jamie, I'll go skydiving. You set it up, and I'll be one of the crew, and I'll go. And every time he would say, all right, we're going to go skydiving in a couple weeks. I got to, $150. And I'd be like, oh, great. And in the back of my mind, I'm going, but you know, James, I may have rehearsal, or I may have an audition. So, like, you can't count on me, so I'm not really going to give you the deposit, knowing in the back of my mind that I'm really a big fucking chicken when it comes to this. And so I'm not going to commit completely to doing this thing. So time rolls on, and it's now the night before going to skydiving. It's August of last year, and Jamie rolls up on me, and I completely forgot about it. And he said, I'm swiping into the little machine, and I'm ringing up the cheeseburgers, whatever the fuck I'm doing. And he goes, okay, Johnny, we're going skydiving tomorrow, right? And I'm like, yeah, okay, yeah. What time? 7:00. I'm like, oh, all right, I got no auditions, whatever, so yeah, I'll be here, knowing full well that 7:00 is way too early for me to get up, and I'm going to sleep right through it, and they're just going to leave without me. So I have 2 problems. Their names are Carly and Maggie, and they're French exchange students, and they don't have a car. And they find out that I'm going, and they roll up on me, and, Johnny, we know you're going skydiving, and we need a car to go. Can we take... Yes. Oh, now what am I going to do? I got to jump out of a goddamn airplane. So 6 a.m. comes pretty goddamn early for me, and I shower and I shave because I figure if you're going to meet God, you should look your best. And I open my front door, and this is August 29th, and it's pouring down rain in Los Angeles. Now, all of you live here, and you know that the song is true. It never rains in Southern California. And it's not just raining. I mean, it's buckets. It's buckets of rain. And I sort of glanced skyward, and I realized that God doesn't want me to die. And I have a feeling of joy about this. But I have to go through the motions because I can't not show up for Maggie and Carly, and we have to go and, you know, all right, well, it's raining. We can't jump out of an airplane. So I go up to the Hard Rock. We get there right at 7 o'clock. There's 15 of us. There's a big debate. Should we drive 110 miles or not to jump out of an airplane when it's raining here? So they get a brilliant idea, and they're going to call the airstrip. Not airport. Airstrip. It's 7 a.m. They call. There's no answer. Fuck, dude. There's no answer. I'm like, dude, they're all asleep. It's 7 o'clock in the morning. I just sunk myself. Because they're like, that's right. All right, well, who wants to go? Let's just go. So Jamie's like, who? Raise your hand. So everybody raises their hand. I can't be a pussy. So, because that's the thing about men. And I'm sure some women are like this, but a lot of men will readily try to put over on you that they are willing to do something and front, even though they're terrified of the concept. It's just a thing about wanting to feel like you're a man, even though on the inside you know you're not. So we drive 110 miles to a place called Taft, California. It's in the San Joaquin Valley. We go over three mountain ranges to get there. It's a beautiful, the San Joaquin Valley, if you haven't seen it, is a beautiful place. It's flat. There's mountains just to the one side when you come over, and that's where the airfield is. It's right near Baker. And we drive, and we're driving through fields of cotton and oranges and corn and all kinds of crops. And we get to this dirt road, and it says Taft Airstrip. And we make a left, and we go down the airstrip, and there's like huge, monstrous potholes because everyone up there drives trucks. No one drives cars there. So they can handle it, and our cars are getting literally shaked apart. Shh. John, help me. Is that shaked? Okay. So we pull up, and this is not an exaggeration. The airport, the place that they call an office, was an oversized Sears storage shed. You know what you and I put our lawnmower in? That's what they operate a business out of. So the 15 of us make the trip, which, like, we're there in about 2 hours, and we sign up and we fill out all this paperwork and we have to take a class, and the jump master is like, well, you know, normally breaks around, it's cloudy, it's very overcast. And I'm thinking, God, I don't have to jump, you know? And the jump master, which is what he calls himself, he says, well, it normally breaks around 12 noon, and we'll see what the sky looks like at noon, and we'll make a decision. So the sky is really overcast, and so he says, but you have to take this class anyway. So we take the class, and they have a mock-up plywood airplane where you have to climb in the backside of the airplane, and they come with your instructor or an instructor. They don't really assign them until you jump. And you get in this little airplane, and it's the roof's here, and there's a guy strapped to your back, and You just sort of practice this rocking thing that you can roll out of the airplane to your death. So the sky starts to turn blue. Little patches of blue are coming off in the distance. And the jump master, that's what he calls himself, says, okay, looks good. Look, this is a good day. We're going to jump today. And I'm petrified. I mean, on the outside, I'm like, woohoo, we're jumping! And on the inside, I'm like, oh my God. Because even if I survive the concept of jumping out of a perfectly good airplane, which I couldn't really understand the idea of that at the time, I knew that I was going to wuss. Like, I knew I was going to shit my pants, and all of my friends were going to know it. So either way, I was going to look bad. Either I was going to die, or people were going to wish I was dead. So everybody starts getting ready, and then the jump master looks at me. And he says to me,
"What do you weigh?"
And I was like, 242, which was an accurate figure. And he goes, "You know, I'm sorry, the wind isn't really that good today. And the more wind, the better it is, you know, the more weight you can carry. And just all of our instructors are too heavy for you and them to jump together. You're not going to be able to jump." I'm like, "Oh, fuck, dude." Now, the interesting thing is my friend Daryl was with us, and he's built exactly like me. And he weighs more than I do, 250. And the guy, out of the corner of his eye, looks at Daryl and says, "What do you weigh?" And Daryl's like, 232. And the guy goes, "What?" And Daryl goes, "All right, I weigh 250. And it's, "Sorry, dude, you can't go." And Daryl, now, honestly, is really, really bummed about this. He doesn't want to give up this opportunity, but I'm rejoicing. And I, at this point, completely let all of my adrenaline go because I don't have to jump. I haven't paid any money. It's all good. So the plane is really small. And it holds three sets of jumpers because you jump in tandem and a guy strapped to your back and a photographer. So one person gets to be photographed as they jump out of an airplane. Who wants to photograph their own death? And pay for it, much less. So we start jumping in threes, and there's a couple other random people mixed in with us. And so it's the third set of jumpers has jumped. So nine people have jumped. And this little instructor guy walks up to me. He's about Tom Chalmers size. And though he wasn't wearing a tiara. He walks up to me and he goes, are you one of them guys who can't jump? And I said, "Yeah, too bad, ain't it?" And all of my friends are around. And we're all sort of exulting in the fact that some of these people have jumped out of a plane. And it's really exciting to watch, you know, but I wasn't going to do it. And I was pleased. And he looks me up and down and he says, "What do you weigh?" And I said, 242. And he says, "You can jump with me." All of my friends are like, "Woohoo!" Oh, my fucking God. So the important issue you have to remember here is that up until this point, I had all my adrenaline, and Lenny said, "You're too fucking fat to jump out of the airplane." And let me tell you something, I was never so happy to be fat in my whole goddamn life. Okay? It's so true. All right? I got to look at my naked ass in the mirror, and actually some of you people have seen it. It ain't pretty, but it can save your life. You got to jump out of the airplane. Okay, so everything's now in a hurry because we're sort of behind schedule because I wasn't planning to jump. So I don't have my little suity thing on. And so they're like, "Come on, boy, go!" So I'm like, and I run into the thing and they're helping me put on a suit that doesn't actually fit, which I didn't really think was a good thing because if they don't make suits big enough for me, then that maybe means that I really am too big. So like people are like pushing on my fat and helping me zip up the thing. It's really not good. And then they put these goggles on me, and they put this blue and white number on me that sort of got like diagonals on it, and it really wasn't flattering either. And they're like, "Go, go, boy, go!" And I'm like, "We're out there." And they go, "Wait, boy, wait!" And I'm like, "What?" And they go, "You got to pay because you're supposed to pay before you jump in case you die." Sylvain was with me on that. So I pull out my $155 and I hand it to the lady who has, and I swear to God, had no teeth. And in the middle of, like, I'm running out the door, she picks up a jar with white milky material floating around. And this is, I swear to God, this is true. She's from Arkansas. She picked nothing. No offense, Matt. Where are you? She picks. Oh, you went to Alabama.
Yeah.
She picks up this jar with white milky stuff floating around in it, and she goes, "You know what that is?" And we're in California. Nobody should be saying, "You know what that is?" And I said, no, ma'am, I don't. And the plane's leaving. And she goes, that there is that dog's nuts. Is this really information I need before I'm going to die? Can't you tell me the meaning of life? Couldn't I be like with Sai Baba or some fucking person instead of this fucking troll with no teeth? The meaning of life is a jar full of dog nuts. So I run out to the airplane and I'm the last one on. You know what that means? Last one on, first one off. So I get on the plane, and the plane is little. Like I said, it only can fit 6, 7, 8 people max. And there's 2 rows of benches. So you're sitting this way on a bench, and the door is right here. Okay? Photographers in the back of the plane. There's a bench on this way, and my friends who are with me are lined up this way, 4 deep, 2 instructors, 2 friends. And my instructor, Jim, who's about, and I'm not kidding, he's like 65 years old, and he's made 7,000 jumps since 1968, and no incidents except the one. And no explanation either. So I'm sitting here, and all right, I'll say that for later. So I'm sitting here on the bench. Now, I'm pretty comfortable in my masculinity. It's true. But it is an uncomfortable feeling to have a man strapping himself to your ass. It just is. At the same time, being terrified that you're going to lose your life and knowing that you got to jump out of a plane that's going to be literally 2 miles in the air, 13,000 feet. You got an altimeter on your chest. And they're like, the whole time they're like, look at your altimeter as we're going. So the plane takes off and we're flying. And there's a plexiglass. Who puts a plexiglass door on a plane? So I'm sitting here and Jim's behind me. He's really a very nice guy. But I'm terrified. And we're flying and the altimeter's starting to spin, you know. And we're taking up and my foot is touching the plexiglass. And I can see out the door. And I can see things getting smaller to the point where then everything becomes big because it's one large thing instead of a bunch of small things. Okay? And I'm literally like... Now, I know you've seen this on TV, and if you've ever been unfortunate enough to see like an accident on the street or something where somebody's going to die... And the paramedics are looking over the body and they sort of give this look to each other that the guy ain't going to make it. That's the look between all the instructors about me. So, and I can't see any of them because they're behind me. But the photographer is like making eyes at me because he's facing forwards. And I can see his eyes and his eyes are jutting from that instructor to that instructor to that instructor and then back to me. And then... the Forbes. And he did. Now, the important thing for you to know here is that once you get in the airplane, it takes off, you lose your $155. You can still back out. You don't have to jump out of the airplane. But you lose your $155, which I didn't care. I'd give him $1,000 if I didn't have to jump. Why am I from Texas all of a sudden? If anybody's ever acted with me here, you know I really have a serious problem with that. I can be in any role and just come up with Texas or England and for no reason. So I'm sitting in the plane on this bench that sort of, and you shuffle down the bench as you're supposed to get closer to the door, but I was last in, first out, right next to the plexiglass door. And we're approaching 13,000 feet. And I'm a nervous wreck, just worse than that. And without warning, the photographer just leans over and whips the fucking door open. And the airplane fills with wind and noise, and my body clenches up. I mean, I couldn't move. And Jim is like, okay, time to go. And he's tapping me on the leg. And I'm like, go where? And he's like, it's time to go. And I'm like, okay. So we, sort of like we're fucking, ride our way down this bench. And we get in front of the door. Now understand something. And I use the Eiffel Tower thing to make you understand that's 500 feet, that Eiffel Tower. It's half scale. The regular Eiffel Tower is 1,064 feet tall. The half scale one is exactly 500 feet high at the observation deck. I was terrified. Now, at this point, I am sitting in front of an open door on an airplane 26 times that height. Like this. And Jim's behind me. He's, are you ready? And I'm like, I don't know if I'm ready. And I had an epiphany. Because I realized at that very moment that I would never be in this very place again. Meaning that either I'm going to jump out and live or die, doesn't matter at that point, or if I back out, I will forever, to my own self, be considered a pussy. And I have to say, it's true. I decided right then and there that I was not going to let my fears choose my life for me. I'm going to choose my life. And so I said, yes, Jim, I'm ready. And I pulled my hands off the door. It was an extremely difficult thing to do. And I crossed them across my chest, which is part of the instruction. And I was very careful to pay attention. And I closed my eyes, which everyone who has ever skydived recommends against, because part of the thrill is to, like, visibly watch yourself get thrown out of an airplane, but I just couldn't do it. So I closed my eyes, and I nodded. And Jim rocks us back. One. I can't do it here because I'll... Two. Three. And we fall forward, and we do... Three tumble salts, successive. It could have been two, could have been four, I have no idea. And the moment we left the airplane, all of my fears evaporated, gone. I was no longer afraid. And so we're falling. And he taps me on the leg. Part of the instruction, he wasn't being fresh. And we go into the swan dive thing, and it straightens us out, and this is now us. And we're falling. Now, we're falling at 110 miles an hour. That's pretty damn fast. I've never driven that fast. I've tried, but I've never driven that fast. And we fall for a whole minute. A minute is a long goddamn time. And they tell you when you're in instruction that even though you're falling like this, that you should lift your head up and look at the horizon. Because you can sort of twist your hands around and you sort of spin and do little cartwheels sideways and catch the mountains on one side and the valley on another. It's really an interesting thing to do. So I pop up, my goggles go right off my head. As on my mother's grave, I went, and I grabbed them the fuck out of the air. I put them back on my face and hooked them under my earlobes because I'm going to look at the horizon. I just paid $155 for this bitch. And I look at the horizon again, and the wind rips them off my head again. And I grab them again. And Jim screams, I have never seen anybody ever do that! That was amazing! So I put the goggles back on my head and I just looked down because I didn't want to pay $10 for a pair of lost goggles. You lose the goggles, pay $10. You pull the ripcord and you lose it, you pay $10. They pull the ripcord and they lose it. You don't pay $10, and it's not attached to anything. It's just a big tube. It's like a dowel with a piece of leather cord on it. So I predetermined Jim's going to pull the ripcord. Besides, I don't want to screw anything up. So he pulls the ripcord, and we immediately go from 110 miles an hour to about 5 miles an hour. And we're really high up in the air. It's really far. And I'm okay because we're so, it's sort of like this. That's what the river looks like. Thank you, Michael Franco. There's nothing to gauge yourself against. You're so far away from the earth that you don't see it coming up at you. It's just this big thing. And so Jim is now talking. He's up about this high behind me, and I'm sort of choking a little bit, and I don't want to tell him, but I figured it's better to die by choking than by splatting. And he's like, "Are you okay?" And I'm like, and he's like, "Oh, you're choking." And he goes, and he just pulls on something. I literally drop about 3 inches. Oh, my God! Don't ever do that again! Now, the instructor is attached to the parachute. You're attached to the instructor. You got to be nice to the instructor on the way down. And I was really nice to him. So we're floating down, and it takes about 10 minutes to float all the way down from the point you pull. And we're steering around, and he's like, that's cotton down there, and that's the state penitentiary. Well, let's stay away from the state penitentiary kind of thing. And you just float, and you float, and you float. And as you're getting down closer, and you're about 3 minutes out, all of a sudden I realize that the ground is getting awfully close. And all of a sudden I'm starting to shake again, and Jim's like, "Don't worry, it's okay. We know what we're doing. We're just a practice couple." So you pull on the thing, and the parachute stops right in midair like you're floating in a balloon. It's an amazing thing. We practiced that twice, and I'm pretty calm, but I'm really a nervous wreck. And we get down really close to the ground. Now, my friends at this point realized that I was terrified. And they, because it was just, no matter how much I bluffed, they realized that I was just scared beyond my wits. So we get to this landing patch of grass, and we hit it, amazingly enough, and we made the most amazing 7-point landing, which means we land and then we flopped around on the ground for about 30 seconds like a salmon on the shores of Wauhatchie River. And I'm jerking and moving, and Jim's like, "Calm down, calm down." I'm like, "What? What?" So he unhooks me, and I jumped up and down for about a half an hour. It was one of the most, it was a life-changing experience. And it's true, for those of you who heard that story before 6 or 7 times, that for about 2 months, I didn't stop talking about that thing. I mean, that was the most amazing, life-changing experience of my life. And I mean, it changed the way I view people. It changed the way I view my own life. It changed the way I view my acting career. In the year and a half before I did that, I booked 2 commercials. Since that time, I've booked 9. I was afraid of women. Not in the sense that, like, ooh, they're going to kill me. But although there was a period. Y'all remember cooties, right? And becoming fearless in your life is a very important thing. And I have a lovely and most amazing girlfriend, and I'm in love with her, and she's in love with me. And not in little part because I jumped out of an airplane, because I wasn't afraid to say, "Atom, I have a crush on you. I like you." And she went, "Oh, you're so cute," sort of like John did. But she don't want to buy the car. So this is the thing I learned. I learned that I was never really afraid of dying. What I was afraid of was making a choice that would have negative implications that I couldn't correct. It's really easy to make a simple choice that's going to be bad. Should I have pasta or should I have chicken? Because the laugh, and it's funny, because I'm funny. But it's also true. If you make a life-altering choice that's wrong, because we get this terrified about things like who we choose to be our spouse, or what house to buy, or if we're going to change jobs, or am I going to quit my job at 30 where I'm making a lot of money and decide to become an artist and live in Hollywood in a little shack where people piss on my bushes.
Sorry about that.